And here we are, finally. The first official episode of the segment Adventure Seekers on this new podcast, Dirt Walker Outdoors. And we will begin with Ellen Falterman. Why? Because I respect and admire her. She inspires me. In fact, reading her well-written posts inspired the idea that led to this podcast. She is made of something else. That expeditionary spirit that has moved entire civilizations. In this modern civilized world, it is difficult to expand your soul beyond the boundaries society provides. We all seem to live within a box we cannot find the edge of. But Ellen seeks to push, twist, and pierce those boundaries to explore beyond herself and find what lies beyond. That spirit deserves our support and encouragement. In a moment, we'll hear from Ellen herself, and afterwards, please stand by as I explain again how you and I can support her adventurous endeavors. Welcome to the Dirt Walker Outdoors Podcast. Hello, Ellen.
Hello.
Did your rowing excursion go today?
Well, it was fun. Like I just told you, I had a weird thing going on with the water situation. I filled my jugs with bad water, and so I had to catch some rainwater and drink it. But other than that, it went really well. And my new seat is amazing.
And how many hours were you on the water today?
That was 11 hours. It was 42 miles. But it was like half up. Well, it was like three quarters upstream and a quarter downstream. It was like a loop thing. Yeah.
Yeah. That sounds strenuous, but you needed that sort of challenge, didn't you?
Yeah. That's my last row before the race. So right. I had to test run the new stuff. You don't want to race with new stuff.
No. If you would tell everyone first who you are and a little about yourself.
Well, my name is Ellen Falterman. My river name is Ellen Magellan. That's what people have been calling me the last 5 years. I am 26 years old. I'm a flight instructor and a river rat.
And a flight instructor for quite a while.
Small airplanes. Yeah. 5 years. Been a flight instructor right. 5 years. That's which means great. I got my ticket when I was like 19 or 20, which I don't know how people like listen to what I had to say. But
at least you're honest about it now.
I mean, I guess when your life is dependent on, you know, someone who knows what they're doing, I guess you have to listen to them. But yeah, I guess I'm a career instructor at this point. I have enough hours to go to regionals, but I really like teaching and I like the hours too. So I'm from a small town in Texas called Tarkenton. I'm from a small town in Texas called Tarkenton.
There you go. That's how you say it.
That's a little bit better. It's about an hour north of Houston in the Piney Woods. And that's where I grew up. But my parents are from Acadiana, Cajun country. And that's kind of where I'm at now. And so when people ask me where I'm from, I don't know where to tell them if I'm from Texas or Louisiana. So I'm from both.
I understand. Can you tell us a little bit about the story, how you started rowing and why?
Right. So if you're meeting me for the first time, or if you're just now following what I've been doing, this has kind of been like 5 years in the making. But what happened was, I did a trip in the Amazon with my brother, Patrick, my oldest brother, and we were in this massive 400-pound wooden canoe paddling with equally heavy single-bladed paddles. I mean, they were like so heavy that whoever was sitting in the front would just like leave the paddle in the water to switch sides. It was ridiculous. We were in this canoe and it got swamped in flash flood currents, and we lost like all our supplies and we almost died in the rainforest. It was like this big deal. And I was 18 years old. So it was a very impressionable time for me. And I was like scared of water for a long time and also scared of being in a canoe. So I went out and did the Missouri River in a kayak, because I wanted to have hatches. And I did actually flip on that trip, and all I lost was a toothbrush. So my plan worked, but I didn't like the kayak situation because I felt like I was just in a wheelchair all day, you know, and my legs weren't doing anything and you couldn't stand up. It was just uncomfortable. So I wanted to go back to canoe life, but I still didn't feel comfortable being in a canoe with it being able to be swamped. And also, I'm just not big enough for a canoe, really. I mean, I'm 115 pounds on a good day. And, you know, me with a single blade in a canoe is just, that's just math. Like, it doesn't work out very well. So I was doing a rendezvous with some Missouri River paddlers. There were like, I don't know, 40 or 50 of us paddling a section of the Missouri River. And this guy showed up in this massive wooden canoe with a rowing rig. A Piantadosi rowing rig dropped. It's a drop-in sliding seat rowing unit, and it latches on to the gunwales, and it's made to fit into a wide variety, wide beam canoes. And I had never seen anybody row before, except for maybe like, I don't know, like Olympics on TV or something. But I was like sold. This dude was like picking up tires out of the river, rowing upstream. Like, I was like, this is cool. So I asked him where he got the rig, and he pointed me the right direction, and I bought one. And I said, this is the answer to my problems. You know, I didn't want the canoe swamping, but I didn't want the kayak. So I found this row, just by chance, found rowing. And I don't understand why it's not more popular, because it just makes so much more sense. You're using the larger muscles in your body. You're more maneuverable. I can row upstream, no problem, which means I'm a lot safer. If I come across a wing dike or something that I need to get away from, I can go upstream and nope out of that situation just fine. And it's just, I'm never going back to the paddle ever again. I'm a rower all the way. So that's kind of how that happened. It was just, you know, they say necessity is the mother of invention. You know, I knew that was the answer to what I was looking for with all my boat problems. And I started rowing, haven't stopped.
Well, you've certainly actually made me look at rowing possibilities, and I'm a kayak and canoe guy myself, so.
You're not the first person to tell me that, actually. I'm converting people, but the you can make your own rowing rig. It's definitely been done before. I highly recommend a sliding seat because you get a lot more leverage. I'm not like an engineer. So the rig I got is Piantadosi rowing rig, and it just drops in and you go, and it unlatches really quick. So like when I portage, I could just pop it out.
Is it heavy?
Yeah, I think it weighs about 45 pounds. So it is a little heavy, but it makes up for it. And you know, in what it does for you.
Efficiency on the water.
Yeah. Yeah.
And what did you do when you picked up this new rig?
I went down the Mississippi River. And I had never
and I went to McDonald's.
And I had never rowed before in my life, and I like watched some YouTube videos and took the boat out like two or three times in my local waterways, and I was like, okay, I think I could do this. And I learned everything else on the river.
That right there is just amazing. So you picked up the new rig, and then you went all the way down the Mississippi River. And
yeah,
that had to have been an incredible trip in itself.
Oh my gosh. The Mississippi is a really great trip. And previously to that, I had done the Missouri River, and that's kind of why I did the Mississippi River, because the Missouri River empties into the Mississippi, the confluence in St. Louis. So I did the Missouri River from Three Forks, Montana to St. Louis. It's 2,300 miles. And then I ended up in the middle of the Mississippi in St. Louis. And I was like, obviously, I have to do this river. So,
So which one would you prefer? I know there's a lot of people that take a trip down the Mississippi every year. Well, not a lot, but there are people. And so which one is the most enjoyable?
I think it depends on what kind of trip you want to have. Because the Missouri River is a little bit more secluded. You're going through the Dakotas, and it's also less well known. Only about, I think it's like 10 to 15 people a year do a descent of the Missouri River, whereas the Mississippi has like 80 to 100 people a year do a descent. So it's just, Mississippi is a lot more well known. And when you're coming down the river, the people who live on the river kind of like understand what you're doing. Whereas on the Missouri, they're just like, what? You're doing the whole thing? This is what?
I've read a number of blogs of people who have done the Mississippi River trip, but not, you don't find many for the Missouri River. I've found a few rafters,
which is crazy because the Missouri River is the longest river in North America. It's longer than the Mississippi by like 200 miles. And I didn't know that. So it's okay if you didn't.
I didn't know that either.
I didn't know anything about the Missouri River. Like I thought Lewis and Clark just walked. Like I missed that lesson in history class.
Yeah, but, it's funny you say that.
Yeah, no, the Missouri is a really cool river and I highly recommend it. I found it was actually more physically challenging than the Mississippi because you have these massive reservoirs on the Missouri and you're just like in a lake for weeks with no current, like big lake, big waves. That's pretty. The Mississippi does have some lakes, but they're much smaller, and it you don't have those massive reservoirs like you do on the Missouri.
I can see where a rowing apparatus would come in handy in those waves.
Yeah,
as a kayaker, I don't like the waves. Yeah.
Yeah, well, I think a kayak is a good idea for the big reservoirs because you're self-contained. But I wouldn't want to be in a single blade canoe doing the Missouri, but it has definitely been done. And no one told me about those reservoirs either. Not that they were supposed to, but I was completely unprepared for that.
When does this lake end?
Yeah, basically I was like, what? Like literally like almost half of the river is lake.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm gonna have to look at that later now. No.
You
piqued my interest, so I'm gonna have to check it out.
It's a cool river, yeah.
We're going to get back to the Missouri River here in just a minute, but after the Mississippi River, well, actually, right at the end of the Mississippi, your Mississippi River trip is when actually I started following you. Then you had your next adventure after that was pretty cool, and I really think people need to go back and read a lot of your posts and the things that you wrote to explain the day was during the Texas 200.
Yeah, the Texas 200. So just go back. You followed me when I was going along the coastline after the Mississippi. Okay, cool. Yeah, that's when a lot of people started picking it up too, because it was like I was off the river and doing something different. Well, that's cool. Yeah, so I got off the river last year, October of last year, and I knew I wasn't going to be doing an expedition this summer. So I filled my summer with boat stuff. And so I did, you know, getting ready for the MR340, which I've been planning that for a while. But I got a message from a friend of mine that I went to high school with, who's now into sailing. And he was like, hey, I think people row this Texas 200 thing. He's like, it's a sailing event, but I think people row it. But by people, there's like literally three people who have rowed it. Two people in one boat one year, and then a solo rower another year. And I was like, yeah, I think I could do that. That sounds like fun. So so like I said, it's a sailing event. So there are 88 sailboats this year. Well, actually 87 sailboats and a rowing canoe. Which is the biggest year they've had. And I showed up with my rig and everyone thought I was crazy. And I kind of thought I was crazy. And, you know, I was actually pretty nervous about the Texas 200 because I'm in an open top canoe. And I remember doing along the coastline last year from the Mississippi Delta to Galveston. And it got to a point where I was just like, I'm tired of being on big water in a boat that's not made for it. You're just like on edge all the time. So I knew the Texas 200 was going to be a lot of open water. It follows the intercoastal, but you're in the bays most of the time. So I was like, I guess, you know, something to do, I guess. Keep me in shape too for the MR340. So
your explanations in your posts and about the Texas 200 and the different waters that you would come across were very well written. And I could actually, even though I have never been in those waters except to walk out and swim in them a little ways, you really explained it well, so I could understand what you were going through during that race. And
thank you very much.
It was pretty extraordinary. I never even thought of it that way, what it would be like until I read what you were doing.
I'm glad you enjoyed my writing. I've been writing for a while, really, like as long as I could write. I've never published anything, but I've always just been a writing person.
Yeah, well, we know a book's coming in the future, so.
Yeah. People have been asking me to write a book for years. I'm gonna try to. I don't know if I'll get one published before I leave on my next expedition, but I'll definitely get it out into the world.
Well, we'll be expecting it. And so back to Missouri, the Missouri River, the MR-340. I had to look this up just earlier because we talked about it last night, and. This going to be your second time?
Yes. The first time I did it was in 2018. I did it in a pedal craft that was a prototype built by an engineer friend of mine who he ended up having some health problems and couldn't race. So I raced his boat. And that was a wacky boat. I did it in 43 hours and 40 minutes, no sleep. So I don't think I'm going to beat my record this year just because I'm in a aluminum tub now. but I'll shoot for it.
Now, I have to ask, after I read some about the MR-340, any hallucinations?
Oh, yeah. I didn't know there were so many. I didn't know there were so many elephants in Missouri.
Why is it elephants? I don't understand.
I don't know either. I figured it out. I think it's because the trees on the river look like the trunks of elephants, and I didn't hallucinate like elephants like dancing in front of me or anything. Like I hallucinated that they were like coming down to the water to drink, and like their trunks were like the tree trunks. And then I also hallucinated like the Missouri River is a really rolling river. It has like lots of boils that'll pop up, and I hallucinated that those boils were like holes opening up into the river, and I was gonna fall all the way to the bottom of the river, and that woke me up.
That is pretty crazy. Yeah, I was reading today, you're not the only person that has hallucinated elephants.
while on the
MR-340.
Yeah, I'll definitely probably hallucinate again this year, because I think this year it's gonna take me longer, so I'll be even longer on no sleep.
So you have to stay in front of the, what is it called? Reaper boat?
Yeah, the Reaper boat. He'll sweep up the boats. I think when I raced in 2018, the cutoff was 88 hours, but they've updated it to 85 hours. So you have to finish in 85 hours.
Wow. And just so everyone is clear that here's this, that's 340 miles in 85 hours from Kansas City to St. Charles, Missouri on the Missouri River.
Yeah, and it's downstream. Thank God it's downstream.
Oh, yeah. I don't know how. Yeah, upstream would be incredible. I don't know how you could do that.
I don't think you definitely couldn't do it in 85 hours, that's for sure.
And then, we talked about the fact that since you're going to be rowing it this time, you have to really plan ahead of what you're going to eat, because you don't want to really stop, because, you know, that takes time. And you don't stop to sleep or much of anything else. So, but you do have to eat and fuel. So that's going to be interesting.
Yeah. It's got to be food that you can pick up real quick and put in your mouth and keep going. You can't be messing around with the spoon or any of that. Just like I'm going to make some beef patties. That's pretty good. I could put that in my face quick. Sausages. I had a racing friend suggest sushi. That's a pretty good pop it in your mouth and go. It's got the rice and the meat in it. Just anything you could think of that you could just put in your mouth and go. And then water is another issue too. You know, of course, most people do camelbacks, the kayakers and the canoers will do camelbacks, but I'm in a sliding seat rowing rig. And so I don't want to put all that weight on my back, but then I also can't like put the jug down and drink from a tube because I'm like sliding the whole time. So I haven't really actually found a solution to that problem. I need to talk to some racing rowers, I guess, but I just decided just to stop and drink, I guess, and drink a whole bunch. I don't know.
Cause you have like a week.
I'm probably just gonna have to
suck. Do whatever comes up.
Yeah. That's actually probably one of the biggest reasons why I won't beat my record, because in the pedal boat, the only time I stopped moving my feet was to poop. Like I told you yesterday, like I even peed myself. Like I had a cup, I would like wash it off, you know, but I would literally just keep my legs rolling the whole time, never stop.
Yeah, well, that's what you got to do. That's what a lot of people do in these races,
even Ironman races. So. It's something that people don't talk about, but anyone who's setting records is peeing themselves. Like, oh, it's just like...
Yeah, they don't mention that on the platform afterwards. But,
but it's... I considered actually like getting a catheter inserted, but I was like, that's probably too far.
You don't want to write a blog about that, maybe.
I was like, how much do I want this to beat my record? But I'm gonna be the only rower in this race. I'm gonna be the first rower in this race, actually.
The first.
Wow.
Now that's pretty incredible.
Yeah, so they're probably gonna have to make a new category if I do well. But the race coordinator has never said that rowing is not allowed. It's just no one has ever done it in a rowing rig, so I'll be the first one, hopefully paving the way.
Yeah, I can't see why it wouldn't be allowed. I mean, in some cases you have a disadvantage, like we were just talking about.
Well, I mean, the hands-free disadvantage is the same disadvantage that anyone is gonna have.
Well, that's gonna be interesting. I'm definitely gonna be following to see where that comes about, and hopefully somebody listening will want to see that too. But
yeah, I'll definitely write a report on it like I did for the Texas 200.
We'll all be watching that one, even though you're gonna have to wait till the hallucinations stop before you start writing.
and take a nap, probably take a big long nap.
Yeah, like 14 hour nap.
yeah
So after that, you have big plans in the future.
I
mean, I looked at your website today. You have big plans.
yeah like crazy big plans. Okay, yeah. So I did a presentation a couple weeks ago for a club, and I started my presentation, the opening was like, hey, my name is Ellen Magellan, I'm gonna row around the world. And I was like, before anyone gets up and just walks out of here, let me backtrack like 5 years, because this is like a whole saga. It's not like I just like woke up one day and I was like, I'm gonna row around the world. Like, this has been a breadcrumb trail that I've been following, and it's led me to this. You know what I mean? It's not like it's only crazy if you don't know the backstory.
That's true.
So
if I popped up and said, hey, I'm gonna row around the world, it's a little bit different when you say it.
If you were gonna do that, I'm sure you would have a backstory too. Like, I don't think anyone, I mean, it's also never been done before. So I can't compare it to like what other people have done. Yeah. But this is I know my story. That's the only, you know, everyone.
Yeah. That's the one that matters.
So that happened. I mean, we've been talking about the rivers, and so it's, you can kind of start to put it together. I mean, all rivers end in the ocean. And so I've been spending the last 5 years rowing down rivers and doing river stuff. And I got deposited into the Gulf of Mexico, and I'm looking around and I'm like, I can just keep going, you know? And originally, actually, I was looking at doing a lap of the Gulf of Mexico. I was like, yeah, I can do like a counterclockwise lap. And so I started looking into boats that could handle that route. I definitely couldn't do it in my rowing canoe, because you have to make an open water crossing from Yucatan to Cuba and another one from Cuba to Florida. And I'm sure you could do that in an open top canoe, but I'm not that crazy.
That's a long way.
Yeah, that would make me very nervous. And also, you're dealing with surf zone. And I just didn't, I was tired. Like I said, I was tired of being on big water in a boat not made for it. So I needed to get a bigger boat. So I found out that there are ocean rowing boats, which I did not know. And I was like, oh, okay. And they're built for and capable of crossing oceans. So I was like, cool, an ocean rowboat. And they're also very expensive. So I was
say how expensive. That's how expensive they are.
Yeah, it's so expensive that if I tell you the price, you're gonna call me crazy. So, but I'm almost done paying for it. I only have one more month left. But so I was like looking at these boats, and I said, well, if I go through all the effort and money of getting one of these boats, you know, just to do a lap of the Gulf of Mexico, well, then if I'm in a boat that's capable of crossing oceans, and I've already paid for it and everything, when I get to the Yucatan, I'm probably just going to want to keep going, you know. And if I keep going south, then I can make it to Panama. And if I make it to Panama and go through the canal, if I go through the canal and I'm in a boat that's capable of crossing oceans, and I can cross the Pacific, which has been done. And it just kind of like, I just kept putting it together from there. I was like, well, if I do that, then I'm here, and then I can do this, and then I'm there, and then I can go around the world.
Right. Yeah. That's it's just that simple. Yeah. Yeah. So that crossing the Pacific, well, first of all, the Panama Canal, that would be amazing in itself.
Yeah, I'm excited about that. I don't think I'll be able to row through it just because they have a regulation of 5 knots. You have to maintain 5 knots through the entire canal. So I don't think they'll legally allow me to row through the canal. So I'll probably have to get a tug. But oh well, that's just a legal issue.
It'll still be an incredible experience going through the Panama Canal.
Getting to Panama is going to be, it's going to take me like almost a year just to get to Panama, because I decided I'm going to take the long way and go through the Caribbean and go island hopping in the Caribbean.
Well, of course.
My way there.
Yeah. I mean, right?
Yeah. Well, I actually decided to do that not only because the Caribbean looks like a cool place, but because of the winds and the currents. There's the westerly winds that are pushing you towards the mainland Central America. So if I stay in the Caribbean, I can kind of like take shelter behind the islands and wait for a good time to cross island.
I've actually watched some people sailing do that very thing. I didn't realize that there were so many, what would you call them, just hiding places in the Caribbean islands where you can.
Oh, yeah. That's why the pirates like the Caribbean so much. There's a million places to hide.
Yeah, I never knew that until the last few years when I've actually, I went down a rabbit hole, you know, looking into sailing. I thought about actually living on a sailboat for a year myself. It's one of my goals, maybe, we'll see. But I see why you came up with that plan, because it can get pretty hairy out there.
Yeah. I mean, the ocean is on a whole other level from what I've been doing, which is fine. I mean, I feel like I'm graduating, you know, onto the next level. And when I started doing river stuff, I didn't know anything about river stuff. And now I know a lot about river stuff. So like in order to be really knowledgeable in something, you just have to start doing it. And anyone who's really knowledgeable in something at one point didn't know anything. And the only reason they know more than you is because they've been doing it longer. So you just have to start.
That's very true. And then you're going to take how long across the Pacific?
That'll be about 12 months.
Yeah, 12 months, pretty solitary.
Very solitary. I don't think you could get farther away from people on the planet than in the middle of the Pacific.
24 or 25 foot boat?
It's actually 23. My website says 24, but it's 23.
23 foot long and what, basically like two canoes wide. I don't know. It's six and a half.
The beam is 6.5.
Yeah. 6.5 feet wide, all out there for a year in that big water.
Yeah. That's going to be crazy.
Are you going to fish?
I'll have the fishing stuff and like a spear gun for like basic survival, but most of the time I'm just going to be rowing.
I can imagine so, because you got to get somewhere.
I mean, I brought a fishing pole down the rivers and I hardly ever used it, because but at the end of the day, you just want to make camp and go to bed. Like, you're tired. You don't want to clean a fish.
Oh, well, you know, you can put them back.
Yeah, then you're just like wasting time. The only time I would really ever fish was if I was weather bound and I was just bored waiting for the weather to pass.
Yeah, there's a bunch of fishermen that are just like, oh, okay, yeah.
Sorry, guys.
Now, this big little boat that's coming from the UK, is that right?
Yep.
R15 from Randolph.
Yeah, that's the model. Yeah. Rannoch. R-A-N-N-O-C-H. Rannoch,
out of UK, the R15. You are wanting to circumnavigate the globe, which you said will take, what, 6 or 7 years, possibly?
Yeah, that sounds about right.
6 or 7 years, circumnavigating the globe in a single-person rowboat.
Yeah, it's actually a two-person rowboat, but they're converting it to a solo rower for me, and we're using the extra space so I can store all my food.
And you will be the first to do anything of this kind.
That's what they told me when I went to go visit and look at these boats. The founder, I brought him. We went and had breakfast together, and I had sent him an email, you know, so they like knew I was coming and what I was planning on doing. But I brought this binder, and in it I had printed some maps, like blank maps, and I had taken colored pencil, and like a kindergartner, I had like drawn my route and like, you know, different colors for different legs, and I put like estimates on distance and times of year and stuff like that. And I gave him this stupid little binder with my kindergarten maps inside of it. And he looked at this thing for literally like almost 3 minutes. He didn't say anything. And he was just looking at my map. And he's like, you know, no one's ever done this before. And I was like, oh, I really didn't know that. So that's what they told me, at least. So they're like the guys. They're like the number one ocean rowing company in the world. So they know their stuff.
Yeah, they would know if someone's done it before.
They would know. Yeah.
You would think. And that's just incredible to me. I really hope you get to that point. And I really hope that you can get the support that you're going to need to get that done. And I don't mean support alongside of you. I just mean the financial support and that you're going to need from people like everywhere else. So you can keep moving.
Yeah, well, talked to several ocean rowers, and a lot of them have nonprofits and they get corporate sponsors. And so I created a nonprofit and I'm looking for corporate sponsors, and I'm just kind of, I mean, money is an issue. And that's like, you know, if I could do the whole thing without doing nonprofit and doing all this, then just do it quietly, then I totally would, because that's how I've done all the other expeditions I've done. Like, I don't really make a big fuss. I just like go out and do it and then talk about it later. And so I really just like to kind of do my thing, and everything else will follow. But this is leveling up, you know. I decided to make adventuring a career, you know, and I'm working for my money now. Instead of flying airplanes, I will, you know, writing and, you know, content and promoting and all this stuff. It's a job just like anything, and that I'm just working for myself now.
And along with that comes that you have a responsibility to inspire people.
Yeah. And I think that's really good for me. It's like, I've meditated a lot on this. I have a lot of time to think on the water. And I think that's part of my path, because it forces me to be more verbal. It forces me to write even if I don't want to. And that is part of my path to have to share. Because if I'm not required to share, then I will share less. And I think it's good for me to, you know, share as much as I can about this trip.
I totally understand. And that is why I wanted you on this show. So, because I know that you feel that responsibility to share and inspire. And I think people should be inspired by what you have done and what you want to do. And I looked at your website again earlier, right before we spoke. It's fantastic. And I really think that we need to get more people to look at that and buy some of that merch I saw on there.
Yeah. Get that merch. Get that swag.
Get that swag on the EllenMagellanExpeditions.com website. And I'm going to say this again after the interview in the closing. So, but we're going to make sure everyone gets that. It is EllenMagellanExpeditions.com. And you have merch on there. You have a very cool, several blogs on there, some great pictures. And then also it says something about, what does it say? It doesn't say sponsorship. It's a personal sticker.
Yeah. Those are for, I wanted anyone who donated more than like a little amount, I wanted them to get something in return. So if someone donates like a significant amount, they get a sticker on my boat, and it's a personalized, customizable sticker, and you could put anything you want on it. Like so far I've sold about a dozen, and I've gotten all sorts of cool designs. Like people will like draw a sketch, or they'll put a little short quote. I've gotten some photos of like family members, just like whatever you want, basically, whatever image you want to go on my boat to go around the world.
I think that is cool. I really hope some people will jump on that. They're basically traveling around the globe in a rowboat with you.
Yeah, yeah. I thought of that idea while I was rowing too.
You know, that's really cool. And I'm hoping some people jump on that. And I'm hoping more people can see that, you know, the necessity that comes along with that, and that you are doing something that no one does. And we all should support people who want to take that step out to go beyond the limits of what society currently puts barriers on us for. I admire that exceedingly.
Well, and the biggest thing that I've gotten so far out of doing all the expeditions I've done is when people message me and they're like, hey, today I took out my bicycle today and rode and I haven't ridden it in 5 years. Or today I stopped by this coffee shop that I'd never been inside before and I just wanted something new. Or today I bought a kayak. Or just like, because those stories are like, that makes me feel like I am not just doing something for me. I'm like, I have made someone else's life improved because they got the energy to do something because of me. And that's like, that's the biggest thing I get out of all this.
That's fabulous. That is incredible. So I really hope anyone listening again will go to your website, EllenMagellanExpeditions.com. Where else can they find you?
I got Facebook too.
Yeah.
And Facebook, Ellen Magellan Expeditions, and also Instagram, same thing.
Everyone should find Ellen on Facebook, Instagram, definitely on EllenMagellanExpeditions.com. I'm even going to say that one more time afterwards for everyone that wasn't
listening. And you might want to spell it too, because I had a hard time spelling Magellan at first. I had to look up for a name of Magellan and be like, how'd this guy spell it?
Well, it has been great talking to you again. I think this went well. And you know, I'm probably going to ask you to come back again at some point in the near future so we can see what's going on with you.
Sure. I mean, I can talk as long as you want. So, I'm around.
I know that, but probably ought to cut this one down. It's been great once again. And is there anything else you'd like to add before we close?
I don't know. For anyone listening, just, you know, if you have something that you know you're put on this planet to do, then just take the first step in doing it. Because this, I really do feel like this is my purpose. And all you got to do is start. Just start doing it. See where it gets you.
That's beautiful.
And that's what you're doing right now too.
I am. Thank you very much. And you are my step in doing that.
I'm honored.
I appreciate that. Until next time, I hope you have a great night.
Bye.
And there we have it, friends. Ellen Falkerman, the courageous and yet humble young adventurer that stretches the boundaries of what we can accomplish. I ask you, what is important in life? And invite you to visit EllenMagellanExpeditions.com and show Ellen the support that this deserves. Once again, that is EllenMagellanExpeditions.com. Please tune in again next week for a new Adventure Seeker segment. I have some extraordinary people in store for you. Subscribe to the podcast on Spotify or Google. And follow along also as we learn about survival on Survival Sunday and talk about hiking, backpacking, and through hiking on Trail Talk. Until next time, Dirk Walker, Off Trail.